I did what I did for the good of the realm. The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agreed to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder. Many who try to climb it fail, but never get to try again. Fall breaks them.
Think about it. The ladder is all there is. And chaos mixed in. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, where it's raining today again. That's all right. It's better to have more water than not enough water in most cases, except if you're over in some other parts of the world where their houses are floating down the river. And probably there'll be a lot of houses in this country float down the river this season too. You see where they dug out the one Chinaman alive that had been under that whole debris of building complexes for days and days? Pull him out alive. Where there's hope, there's hope. Ha ha ha. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And we're at resist.com, and that's where you can get your college education, even better than a college education, on race, on many other subjects too. So go on up to resist.com, and if you have any questions, send them to me, my email, or the webmaster. There you go. And if you run into bad problems getting your email or something like that, contact the webmaster. You know, I went up to YouTube last night and I saw a speech and a rally by Donald Trump, and there were about 10,000 people there. You know, of course, you know, the regular media will barely mention it. I'll give that to him. He paid for the whole thing himself, and there are a few hecklers, but not that many, and these hecklers weren't the kind of hecklers we had back in the old days. Believe me, I remember when I and two elderly gentlemen went to a rally for George Wallace back in, I forget the exact year, but when he was running for president on the American Independent ticket here in California, on a Democrat ticket everywhere else. And there was a bunch of radical, I guess you'd call them radicals. And I respect radicals, don't get me wrong. Tried to come in and break up the meeting. They had unfolded a big banner against George Wallace. And all of a sudden, the two guys next to me that were 10, 15 years older than me were out of their seats and in the aisles and up there taking them on, man, and running them out. I got up there a little later. They already had them out. I said, Jesus, these senior citizens are hell on wheels. And now I'm a senior citizen. I think I'm more hell on wheels now again than I was in the old days. I thought I was pretty tough back in the old days, but I think I'm getting tougher. But those Wallace rallies remind me a lot of these Donald Trump rallies, minus the real dedicated radicals. These are wimps today. The people that tried to interfere with this rally last night on YouTube, there were only about five or six scattered around the audience, and they were wimps. They led them out. They didn't fight their way out or fight their way in or anything. I'm ashamed of those people. If you're going to demonstrate, demonstrate. Back when we had the Progressive Labor Party and the openly red parties, John Brown Anti-Klan Committee, the Jewish Defense League, and a host of others, we had fun. You went out on a demonstration or give a speech, you didn't know whether you'd come back. These demonstrators today, they're nothing like the old days. Even physically, they're wimpy. Wimpy. The guys look a lot like the frames of girls. But even back then, I never, in several riots that I was involved in, we were attacked, I never saw any significant number of blacks at all. And the minute the fighting started, they weren't there. So all the people of this Black Lives Matter more, don't worry about them, because they're not going to... There may be a few of them that have the balls, but most of them don't. Because you know as well as I do, if they really had the balls and they had the numbers, they could walk over the cops like they were like a hot knife through butter. Back when I told you about the Oxnard riot where we were attacked in the community center and the Progressive Labor Party put 9 cops in the hospital. Almost killed one. If we hadn't pulled him out of their grasp, he'd have been dead. Then we were not lone wolves, but we were smart. Our people didn't go to the hospital. The people who demonstrated against us went to the hospital, and I can prove it. So if anybody says, oh, he's just blowing off, well, I've got the newspaper clippings to prove it. The worst beating the Progressive Labor Party ever got was when the cops staying home with blue flu at the same time we were having our gathering up in Castro Valley, up east of San Francisco. And I don't think the Progressive Labor Party knew that there weren't going to be any cops on the street that week, because they always depended on the cops in the end to protect themselves, protect them. And they came marching down the street to our meeting at American Legion Hall there in Castro Valley, and we came out swinging with baseball bats and uniforms and shields and everything. We beat that living shit out of them. And some of them went to the hospital. None of ours did, though. But that just shows you that if they start losing, the cops are going to intercede and protect them. It's the right wing today. They don't have any balls. I mean, you know, they won't fight. I mean, they talk a good thing, and they'll wave the flags. They'll wear the uniforms, and they'll huff and they'll puff. But if they ever get attacked, they look like cream puffs. They get their ass beat. In fact, I haven't even seen a decent riot like that in several years. I did remember one sticks graphically in my mind years ago when Bill Wilkerson had his Klan. Incidentally, he turned out to be a FBI informant. Tried to sell the Klan to David Duke. Anyhow, they were marching, I think it was in Chattanooga or someplace, Tennessee or something, and they were in their robes. And these rioters, not blacks, but whites, radicals, grabbed them by the robes and threw them down, twisted them around their robes and threw them all the way down the street. Now, if you're going to be having something that might be a riot or somebody going to attack you, the worst thing you want is a bunch of loose, flowing clothes surrounding you, because they're going to throw you all over the place. Yeah, that was on national TV. And that's why the Klan don't seem to get many people joining, I guess. When our Klan was around, we wore black police-type uniforms. Actually, we bought them at a Navy store, clothing store. Black uniforms, cop helmets, shields, baseball bats, and some of our guys were armed with guns even. We didn't get treated like that. No, we didn't. Of course, if we tried that today, I'm sure that they'd arrest us for being terrorists. You guys ain't giving these guys a chance. You're terrorists. Now, almost everybody's got their donation in for this month, and I appreciate that. Some people wait a little longer than others. We got one in from England today. That's good. Yeah, that's P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Well, let's get back to The Pessimist's Guide to History. I love this book, man. I love it. I feel pretty good shape after reading these stories out of this book. 1711, Black Plague in the Holy Roman Empire. Well, where was Jesus? The Black Plague, the scourge of Europe in the Middle Ages, struck again in 1711, this time in the Holy Roman Empire. Some 500,000 people died in this outbreak of the plague. And just when they thought it was safe to go back out on the streets. And I keep, why don't people ever question, how come Jesus didn't intercede? How come the God don't intercede? Don't ever anybody ever ask that very logical question? No, they don't, because they know they don't know that there wasn't any. He didn't exist, neither did his papa. 1715, 1,000 die in a wreck of the Spanish ships. A convoy of 12 ships laden with gold and silver, as well as cocoa and other merchandise from Spain's New World colonies, sailed into a fierce hurricane off Florida coast on July 30th, bound for Spain from Havana, Cuba. The ships were relentlessly battered by the towering waves and raging winds. Now see, God don't like those treasure ships, and I guess he didn't like Spaniards either. Officers and the crew alike fought valiantly to keep their ship afloat, but to no avail. 11 of the 12 ships sank or were totally wrecked in the storm-tossed waters, and some 1,000 passengers, officers, and crewmen were killed. Whoa! Miraculously, almost 1,500 survivors managed to reach the shores of Florida by swimming or hanging on to floating pieces of wreckage. Some time passed before the rescuers from St. Augustine and Havana reached them all. However, and a number who survived the storm died of exposure, thirst, and hunger. And another trove of gold and silver was laid to rest in the briny. Now, you young guys that know how to dive and all that and got your rubber suit and your tanks, there's still a fortune, billions of dollars worth of treasure around the Florida coast and in the Caribbean. It's just waiting for people with the right kind of balls to go get it. 1719, killer snowstorm in Sweden. A large caravan of travelers in Sweden were heading for Trondheim, Norway, when it was caught in a severe snowstorm. Some 7,000 people in the caravan died. That must have been one hell of a caravan. I wonder why they were going over there. Probably to go to a rock concert. Yeah. Maybe the Beatles were playing. 1720, the South Sea Bubble. Oh, this was... I've always laughed about this one. I've got a book on these famous illegal, crazy, abstract, and fraudulent programs that were dreamt up and people went broke. Faced with the problem of an overwhelming national debt, the British government devised a scheme to transfer £31 million of debt to the thriving South Sea Company, which claimed to have a monopoly on British trade with Spanish America. Interest in the South Sea Company surged as a mania for quick profits developed. You see, nothing changes, driving share prices from £100 to over £1,000 within months. And if you were first to get in on it, you were all right. But if you were way down the line, too bad. To accommodate the crowds clamoring for the stock, banks set up tables in the streets of London. Predictably, numerous fraudulent companies also sprang up to take advantage of the rage for investment. Selling shares is such an unlikely scheme as extracting oil from radishes. Also, it was later found that at least three government ministers took bribes and engaged in the South Sea stock speculation. See, nothing changes. Prosecution of the frauds led to a general distrust of stock companies and a stampede to sell, causing the South Sea Company share prices to plunge to £135. Thousands of people lost their life savings in a financial panic, and suicide rates soared. Well, they deserve it. Meanwhile, the British economy was also shattered by the collapse of the stock. One of the members of Parliament voiced the feelings of many when he suggested that the directors of the company be sewn into a sack and tossed into the Thames River, perhaps a suitable punishment for those involved in modern-day stock frauds and bank scandals. But you take notice, it never changes, because that's the stock and trade of the ruling class. That's what the ruling class always does. They make out, they're first on the list, and then the people come later, lose their ass. Well, there's been a lot of these bubbles. Hell, there's bubbles right now that are ready to burst, and if they burst, everything's going to collapse. You got a small bubble in San Francisco with the real estate, and real estate's going through the roof up there, and something's going to happen. That bubble's going to break. Then you had the tulip mania from Holland. That's another one. I'll read about it sometime. Somehow they started investing in the tulip business, and it was another con job, and I'll read about it to you. I read about it years ago, and it's crazy how people get the greed. Greed gets in them. They get the greed, man, and then they're off and running. Yeah. Okay. 1722, ergotism, outbreak in Russia. What the hell is ergotism? Some 20,000 Russians died horrible deaths after eating bread made from rye infected with the deadly fungus. The fungus caused a severe nervous disorder in victims called ergotism, which resulted in delusions, convulsions, burning pain, and finally death. These symptoms were not blamed on witches, at least. Well, we're going to have a lot of that as time goes on again, because as the world population keeps climbing and as there's a demand for more and more food, a lot of that food is going to be improperly grown and cultivated and handled and all that kind of stuff to try to fill the desire for food to people around the world. And it's going to be real difficult in the future, maybe even 10, 20 years, for you to get decent food. You're going to have to be real careful, and you'd be better off if you grow the food yourself or have somebody close to you grow the food, because food's going to be coming from countries all over the world, and you can't trust that food. You know, we've already found that out with China. Here's another happy story. 1727, earthquake hits Persia, which is Iran today. A massive earthquake demolished the Persian city of Tabriz in modern Iran, killing over 75,000 people. It had been 700 years since the last one. Not a bad average. Well, anyhow, one more short one here. No, we'll save that till tomorrow. That's it from my cynical, pessimistic news of the day, or yesteryear. Yeah. Okay, turn that off. Most of these stories scare me, and I ain't afraid of nothing. You know, most white people will gripe and be pissed off and everything about the courts and everything like that, and they're losing their freedom when they have the maximum weapon right in their hands anytime they want to use it, jury nullification. White people used it in the South during the civil wrongs times, and blacks used it with in L.A. when the football player got his ass in the jam for cutting his wife's head off, white wife, O.J. Simpson. That was jury nullification. So you got the freedom if you'll use it. You can get any white man off the hook you want to. If you got enough white people on the jury, just say not guilty. Not guilty. And this is how that works. For more than 600 years, that is, since the Magna Carta in 1215, there has been no clearer principle of English or American constitutional law than that in criminal cases it is not only the right and duty of the juries to judge what are the facts, what is the law, and what was the moral intent of the accused, but that it is also their right and their primary and paramount duty to judge the justice of the law. and to hold all laws invalid that are, in their opinion, unjust or oppressive, and all persons guiltless in violating or resisting the execution of such laws. And I did that a couple of times. I was called in for jury duty. And the one time I was on the last group to be an alternate, and so they wanted to voir-dire me, check out how I thought about it. So I stood up and said, I judge the law and the facts. If the law is unjust, not guilty, I'll leave him go. And boy, I never saw two attorneys, both the prosecuting attorney, the defense attorney, and the judge, all on their feet at the same time. Get him out of here! Unless such be the right of the duty of the jurors, it is plain that instead of juries being a palladium of liberty, a barrier against tyranny and oppression of the government, they are really mere tools in his hands for carrying into execution any injustice and oppression it may desire to have executed. In other words, they can get away with anything, which they do. They do it every day. But you have the power. The white race, black race, anybody's got the power. If you've got enough people on that jury to say, screw you, then you walk. But for the right to judge of the law and the justice of the law, juries would be no protection to an accused person, even as to matters of fact. For if the government can dictate to a jury any law whatever in a criminal case, it can certainly dictate to them the laws of evidence. That is, it can dictate what evidence is admissible and what admissible, and also what force or weight it is to be given to the evidence admitted. And if, you know, that's like these judges say, you'll do what I say. And you say, no, I won't do what you say. Well, you're out of here. Okay, I'm out of here, but I ain't going to do what you say. And if the government can thus dictate to a jury the laws of evidence, it can not only make it necessary for them to convict on a partial exhibition of the evidence rightfully pertaining to the case, but it can even require them, hold it, even require them to convict on any evidence whatever that it pleases to offer them. The rights and duties of jurors must necessarily be such as are here claimed for them, will be evident when it is considered what trial by jury is and what is its object. The trial by jury, then, is a trial by country, that is, by the people, as distinguished from a trial by the government. It was anciently called the trial per pace, that is, trial by the country. And now in every criminal trial, the jury are told that the accused has for trial put himself before his country, which the country is you, the jury. The object of this trial by country or by the people, in preference to a trial by government, is to guard against every species of oppression by the government. In order to effect this end, it is indispensable that the people or the country judge of and determine their own liberties against the government, instead of government's judging of and determining its own powers over the people. How is it possible that juries can do anything to protect the liberties of the people against the government if they're not allowed to determine what those liberties are? Any government that is in its own judge of and determines authoritatively for the people what are its own powers over the people is an absolute government, of course, a dictator. It has all the powers that it chooses to exercise. There is no other, or at least no other accurate definition of a despotism than this. On the other hand, any people that judge of and determine authoritatively the government, for the government, what are their own liberties against the government, of course retain all the liberties they wish to enjoy. In other words, that's all you have to do. You get enough people in your town to just go on a jury and say, bullshit, and hang the jury, and they can't convict anybody of anything. And this is freedom. At least it is freedom to them, because although it may be theoretically imperfect, it nevertheless corresponds to their highest notions of freedom. To secure the right of the people to judge of their own liberties against the government, the jurors are taken, or must be, to make them lawful jurors from the body of the people, by lot, or by some process that precludes any previous knowledge, choice, or selection of them on the part of the government, or the dictator, as we have. We have 400 or 500 congressmen and senators that are all dictators. This is one to prevent the government's constituting a jury of its own partisans or friends. In other words, to prevent the government's packing a jury with a view to maintain its own laws and accomplish its own purposes. You see, back in, under the crown in England, they had the Star Chamber, where they take you in this room without you had no defense or no lawyer to try to defend you. And they decide anything they wanted to decide. It was called a Star Chamber, and that's what we revoked, what we went against by developing trial by jury. And but the people have given up their rights under trial by jury. It is, and if you can't get them to do that, how are you going to get them to participate in a revolution? Forget it. If they won't do the simple things, you're never going to get them to do the hard things. It is supposed that if 12 men be taken by lot from the mass of the people without the possibility of any previous knowledge, choice, or selection of them on the part of the government, the jury will be a fair epitome of the country at large, and not merely of the party or faction that sustain the measures of the government. That substantially all classes of opinions prevailing among the people will be represented in the jury, and especially that the opponents of the government, if the government have any opponents, will be represented there as well as its friends, that the classes who are oppressed by the laws of the government, if any are thus oppressed, will have their representatives in the jury, as well as those classes who take sides with the oppressor, that is, with the government. So you see, it's very simple. You've always had the weapon of freedom in your hands. You didn't need a gun, at least not at that point. You just needed jury nullification. Now, you white people, you know, we're always pretending or saying we're supreme and all that crap, but look, it took blacks in downtown L.A. to give jury nullification to O.J. Simpson, and they did it, which is correct. Doesn't mean he didn't kill him, but it was very correct and constitutional for those people to do that. And the white people said, "Oh, that's horrible. He got off." Well, it sometimes works out that way. It is fairly presumable that such a tribunal will agree to no conviction except such as substantially the whole country would agree to if they were present taking part in the trial. A trial by such a tribunal is therefore in effect a trial by the country. In its results, it probably comes as near to a trial by the whole country as any trial that is practicable to have without too great inconvenience and expense, and as unanimity is required for the conviction. It follows that no one can be convicted except for the violation of such laws as substantially the whole country wished to have maintained. Now, they may be, even at that point, they could be unconstitutional or unfair, but unjust, but using the jury nullification will be the closest thing to perfect legalism. The government can enforce none of its laws by punishing offenders through the verdicts of juries, except such a substantial whole people wish to have enforced. You know, like they put a racist in the court today on the stand, and you know everybody's going to vote against him. The government, therefore, consistently with the trial by jury, can exercise no powers over the people, or what is the same thing, over the accused person who represents the rights of the people, except such as substantially the whole people of the country consent that it may exercise. In such a trial, therefore, the country or the people judge of and determine their own liberties against the government. Instead of the government judging and determining its own powers over the people. But we forgot all this, or don't pay attention to it, or don't have the balls to even do it. But all this trial for the country would be no trial at all by the country, but only a trial by the government, if the government could either declare who may and who may not be jurors, or could dictate to the jury anything whatever, either of law or evidence, that is, of the essence of the trial, which they do now in every court in the land. They even decide who's going to be on the jury in most cases. You've got to have so many blacks and so many whites. Silly stuff like that. If the government may decide who may or who may not be jurors, it will be, of course, select only its partisans and those friendly to its government measures. It may not only prescribe who may and who may not be eligible to be drawn as jurors, but it may also question each person drawn as a juror as to his sentiments in regard to the particular law involved in each trial before suffering him to be sworn into the panel, or exclude him if he be found unfavorable to the maintenance of such a law. And that's exactly what I did when I stood up in Vista, California, and said I not only judged the facts, but the law. And there happened to be a guy who was up there for having some pot, and I didn't care. I voted against giving him any trouble. But they dumped me immediately. They don't want people like me on a jury. So also, if the government may dictate to the jury what laws they are to enforce, it is no longer a trial by the country. Let's see here. But a trial by the government, because the jury then try the accused, not by any standard of their own, not by their own judgments and their rightful liberties, but by a standard dictated to them by the government. Let's see, I got disturbed there. But by a standard dictated to them by the government, and the standard thus dictated by the government becomes the measure of the people's liberties. If the government dictates the standard of trial, it of course dictates the results of the trial, and such a trial is no trial by the country, but only a trial by the government. And in it, the government determines what are its own powers over the people, instead of the people's determining what are their own liberties against the government. In short, if the jury have no right to judge of the justice of the law of the government, they plainly can do nothing to protect the people against the oppression of the government, for there are no oppressions which the government may not authorize by law. I mean, you go in any courtroom in the country and you'll see the violations of people's rights. I was there in L.A. a few times at court and sit there and watch them bring in all these black people into the municipal court there, and they gave away their rights all the time, you know. Just gave them away. Of course, they didn't have much choice because they couldn't afford an attorney. Well, they get a court-appointed attorney who, in many cases, sell them down the river. I mean, it's absolutely criminal what goes on in these courts. And it's one of the reasons why people riot and kill people. The jury are also to judge whether the laws are rightful expounded to them by the court. Unless they judge on this point, they do nothing to protect their liberties against the oppressions that are capable of being practiced under the cover of a corrupt exposition of the laws. If the judiciary can authoritatively dictate to a jury any exposition of the law, they can dictate to them the law itself, and such laws as they please, because laws are, in practice one thing or another, according to as they are expounded. I would hope that some of you people know something about this, because you can't really understand the oppressive government unless you understand trial by jury. Like, you know, grand juries. They're sort of like the Star Chamber. You can't take an attorney into the grand jury room. I've been in there two or three times. And so the only thing you can do is take the Fifth. Your name, address, and phone number, or whatever. That's it. If you ever get called into a grand jury, don't ever answer their questions. Just take the Fifth. Because you are out without representation. And the grand jury is the darling of the prosecutor. The prosecutor's in there for a few weeks with an impaneled jury, and he's romancing those people all around, joking and things like that, and so they get to where they love the prosecutor. So when you come in there, the fool that's being drug in there, and you start answering their questions, these are questions that are automatically designed to find you guilty of a crime. So why would you talk to them? So I took the Fifth at least one in a state trial, not a trial, but in a grand jury, and two in federal, as did Robert Miles, and unfortunately Bob Richard Butler did not. He tried to convince them about Christian identity instead of just saying, I got nothing to say. But luckily he didn't get in trouble. The jury must also judge whether there really be any law, be it good or bad, as the accused is charged with having transgressed. Unless they judge on this point, the people are liable to have their liberties taken from them by brute force, without any law at all. The jury must also judge the laws of evidence. If the government can dictate to a jury the laws of evidence, it can not only shut out any evidence it pleases, tending to vindicate the accused, but it can require that any evidence whatever that it pleases to offer be held as conclusive proof of any offense whatever which the government chooses to allege. Now you see why our prisons are so full. It is manifest, therefore, that the jury must judge of and try the whole case, and every part of the parcel of the case, free of any dictation or authority on the part of the government. They must judge of the existence of the law, of the true exposition of the law, of the justice of the law, and of the admissibility and weight of all the evidence offered. Otherwise, the government will have everything its own way, as it does now. The jury will be mere puppets in the hands of the government, which they are now, and the trial will be in reality a trial by the government, and not a trial by the country. By such trials, the government will determine its own power over the people, instead of the people determining their liberties against the government. And it will be an entire delusion to talk, as for centuries we have done, of the trial by jury as a palladium of liberty, or as any protection to the people against the oppression and tyranny of the government. The question then between trial by jury, as thus described, and trial by government, is simply a question between liberty and despotism, which we have plenty of despotism now. The authority to judge what are the powers of the government and what the liberties of the people must necessarily be vested in one or the other of the parties themselves, the government or the people, because there is no third party to whom it can be entrusted. If the authority be vested in the government is absolute, and the people have no liberties except such as the government sees fit to indulge them with. If, on the other hand, that authority be vested in the people, then the people have all the liberties as against the government, except such as substantially the whole people, through a jury, choose to disclaim. And the government can exercise no power except such as subsequential the whole people through a jury consent that it may exercise. The force and justice of the preceding argument cannot be evaded by saying that the government is chosen by the people. That, in theory, it represents the people, that it is designed to do the will of the people, that its members are all sworn to observe the fundamental or constitutional law instituted by the people, that its acts are therefore entitled to be considered the acts of the people, and that to allow a jury representing the people to invalidate the acts of the government would therefore be arraying the people against themselves. That's the phony lie they try to come up with. There are two answers to such an argument. One answer, wait a minute, let me see how much time we got here. Yeah, we got some time. One answer to that, in a representative government, there is absurdity or contradiction, nor any arraying of the people against themselves in requiring that the statutes and enactments of the government shall pass the ordeal of any number of separate tribunals before it shall be determined that they are to have force of laws. Our American constitutions have provided five of these separate tribunals, to wit, representatives, senate, executive, jury, and judges, and have made it necessary that each enactment shall pass the ordeal of all these separate tribunals before its authority can be established by the punishment of those who chose to transgress it. And there is no more absurdity or inconsistency in making a jury one of these several tribunals than there is in making representatives or senate or executive or judges one of them. There is no more absurdity in giving a jury a vote or a veto upon the laws than there is giving a veto to each of these other tribunals. The people are no more arrayed against themselves when a jury puts its veto upon a statute which the other tribunals have sanctioned than they are when the same veto is exercised by the representatives, the Senate, the executive, or the judges. But another answer to the argument that people are arrayed against themselves when a jury hold an enactment of the government invalid is that the government and all the departments of government are merely the servants and the agents of the people, not invested with arbitrary or absolute authority to bind the people, but required to submit all of their enactments to the judgment of a tribunal more fairly representing the whole people before they carry them into execution, by punishing any individual for transgressing them. If the government were not thus required to submit their enactments to the judgment of the country or the people before executing them upon individuals, if, in other words, the people had reserved to themselves no veto upon the acts of the government, and the government, instead of being a mere servant and agent of the people, would be an absolute despot over the people. It would have all power in its own hands, as it does now, because the power to punish carries all other powers with it, a power that can of itself and of its own authority punish disobedience, can compel obedience and submission, and is above all responsibility for the character of its laws. In short, it is a despotism, which it is now in every court in the United States. And it is of no consequence to inquire how a government came by this power to punish, whether by prescription, by inheritance, by usurpation, or by delegation from the people, if it has now but got it. The government is absolute. In other words, the time for a revolution in this country were a long time ago. I mean, time for a revolution, it was 100 years ago, maybe 200 years ago. And we didn't have it, did we? The closest we had to it was the Civil War, which was not really dealing with the absolute facts, other than the fact that the South had every right of the Constitution, which they signed up for, to leave the Union. There was no doubt about that, no matter what the reason. And it is of no consequence to inquire how a government came by this power to punish, whether by prescription, by inheritance, by usurpation, or by delegation from the people. If it had now but got it, the government is absolute. It is plain, therefore, that if people have invested the government with power to make laws that absolutely bind the people and to punish the people for transgressing these laws, the people have surrendered their liberties unreservedly into the hands of the government. And you hear all these politicians that always fall back on this. We are a country of laws, not men, but laws. Well, we're a country of men who can get on a jury and decide on your liberty or whether you're walking around. They say it's the written law. Well, the written law by who? Well, the written law by the system. Fuck the system. It is of no avail to say in answer to this view of the case that in surrendering their liberties into the hands of the government, people took an oath from the government that it would exercise its power within certain constitutional limits. For when did oaths ever restrain a government that was otherwise unrestrained? No, they all become dictatorships. This is a dictatorship of democracy. They call it democracy. That's a joke. Or when did government fail to determine that all its acts were within the constitutional and authorized limits of its power, if it were permitted to determine that question for itself? Neither is it of any avail to say that if the government abuses its power and enacts unjust and oppressive laws, the government may be changed by the influence of discussion and the exercise of the right of suffrage. Discussion can do nothing to prevent the enactment or procure the repeal of unjust laws unless it be understood that discussion is to be followed by resistance. See what I'm talking about? Tyrants care nothing for discussion that are to end only in discussion. Discussions which do not interfere with the enforcement of their laws are but idle wind to them. They don't care. You can have all these meetings and political parties and argue back and forth. They don't give a shit. Power is where it's at. Suffrage is equally powerless and unreliable. It can be exercised only periodically, and the tyranny must be at least borne until the time suffering comes. Besides, when the suffrage is exercised, it gives no guarantee for the repeal of existing laws that are oppressive and no security against the enactment of new ones that are equally so. The second body of legislators are liable to and likely to be just as tyrannical as the first, and we see that year after year after year. If it be said that the second body may be chosen for their integrity, the answer is that the first were chosen for that very reason, and yet proved tyrants. The second will be exposed by the same temptations as the first, and will be just as likely to prove tyrannical. Now, that's the same way. You're getting ready to go down there and vote for Trump. It won't change anything radically. Nothing's going to change radically. But each time they try to entice us out of our holes to go out there and vote again. Well, they're not. I quit a long time ago, and I'm not going to do it till the end of my days. I'm not going to be conned anymore. Whoever heard that succeeding legislators were, on the whole, more honest than those that preceded them? What is there in the nature of men or things to make them so? If it is to be said that the first body were chosen from the motives of injustice, that the facts proves that there is a portion of society who desire to establish injustice, and if they were powerful and artful enough to procure the election of their instruments to compose the first legislature, they will be likely to be powerful or artful enough to procure the election of the same or similar instruments to compass the second. In other words, Democrat, okay, we'll get them rid of them. Now we'll get the Republicans. Oh, we'll get rid of the Republicans. Now we get the Democrats. Nothing changes. The right of suffrage, therefore, and even the change of legislatures, guarantees no change of legislation. Certainly no change for the better. Even if a change for the better actually comes, it comes too late, because it comes only after more or less injustice has been irreparably done. But at best, the right of suffrage can be exercised only periodically, and between the periods, legislatures are wholly irresponsible. Well, I say the only way you can keep it reasonably honest is by the force of the gun. when one of the first radio shows I ever did when I got politically active, I advocated every time a representative of the state would be sent to Sacramento, an armed guard go with him with a gun, stand right beside him when he's putting his laws in force. And the logic of that is, if he becomes dictatorial and tyrannical, he shoots the son of a bitch. No despot was ever more entirely irresponsible than a Republican legislator during the period for which they are chosen. They can neither be removed from their office nor called to account while in their office, nor punished after they leave their office, be their tyranny what it may. Well, look at the Bushes. Look at the Cheneys, sworn to uphold the Constitution. Yet they're arch murderers and warmongers, psychopaths, and if justice be anything, they would be taken to the World Court in The Hague and tried. But they're not going to be, because it pays to be a rat, it pays to be a crook, it pays to be treasonous, it pays off. So why not? Why not they get involved in it? There's plenty of people like that around. They're always ready to step in. Moreover, the judicial and executive departments of the government are equally irresponsible to the people and are only responsible by impeachment and dependence on their salaries to these irresponsible legislatures. This dependence of the judiciary and the executive upon the legislature is a guarantee that they will always sanction and execute its laws, whether just or unjust. Thus, the legislators hold the whole power of the government in their hands and are at the same time utterly irresponsible for the manner in which they use it. If now this government and the three branches, thus really united in one, can determine the validity and enforce its own laws, it is, for the time being, entirely absolute and wholly irresponsible to the people. But this is not all. These legislators and this government, so irresponsible, while in power, can perpetuate their power at pleasure if they can determine what legislation is authoritatively upon the people and can enforce obedience to it, for they can not only declare their power perpetual, but they can enforce submission to all legislation that is necessary to secure its perpetuity. They can, for example, prohibit all discussions of the rightfulness of their authority, forbid the use of suffrage, prevent the election of any successors, disarm, plunder, imprison, and even kill all those who would refuse submission. If, therefore, the government, all departments united, is absolute for a day, that is, if it can for a day enforce obedience to its own laws, it can in the day secure its power for all time, like the queen who wished to reign but for a day, but in that day caused the king her husband to be slain and usurped his throne. Nor will it avail to say that such acts would be unconstitutional, and that unconstitutional acts may be lawfully resisted, for everything a government pleases to do will of course be determined by its constitutional, if a government itself be permitted to determine the question of the constitutionality of its own acts. Well, that's what happens now. I mean, illegal war against Iraq and occupation of all these other countries, totally illegal, and they can determine it's legal. Anything they want legal is legal. Every president that disobeys the Constitution or anything like that, all they have to say, the Supreme Court, oh yeah, that's legal. That's legal, like Bush winning that election a few terms ago, and Gore getting his ass beat. Well, Gore was a wimp. He should have fought. He should have brought it to the steps of the White House. But he folded like a cheap suit, cheap cards. Those who are capable of tyranny are capable of perjury to sustain it. Of course they are. Got any time left here? We got some time. The conclusion, therefore, is that any government that can, for a day, enforce its own laws without appealing to the people or to a tribunal fairly representing the people for their consent is, in theory, an absolute government. irresponsible to the people and can perpetuate its power at pleasure. You know, like I recommended before, they could easily set up electronically today a three buttons on the front of your television, and you watch them argue and debate the subject, and then you'd have yes, no, and not decided. And you could just reach over and press the button. Then they have closely resembling a democracy. But they're not going to do that because they know that people in most cases would not vote for it. Most people in the 60s, in the 50s, would not have voted for the Civil Wrongs Bill. They have to do these things just unconstitutionally. Well, they're not unconstitutional because then the Supreme Court or the federal court say, oh, yeah, that was constitutional. Well, what about the people? Fuck the people. Same thing about illegal aliens. If you had that on the front of your TV, I would say that when we got started fighting this stuff, 85% of the people would have pressed the button no when saying you can let these people into the country. But they're not going to do that. Shit, they're not going to do that. What would the corporations do? They couldn't make any money. The trial by jury then gives to any and every individual the liberty at any time to disregard or resist any law whatever of the government, if he is be willing to submit to the decision of a jury. The questions whether the law be intrinsically just and obligatory, and whether its conduct is regarding to resist it, were right in itself. And any law which does not, in such a trial, obtain the unanimous sanction of 12 men taken at random from the people and judging according to the standard of justice to their own minds, free from all dictation and authority of the government, may be transgressed and resisted with impunity by whomever pleases to transgress it. You know, all the time these judges will tell the jury, you have to do what I say. You have to rule as my law says. And, well, you don't have to at all. Screw them. Just say no. Or just walk out, you know. But they get away with it. A directed verdict by the judge. Bullshit. The trial by jury authorizes all this. Or it is a sham and a hoax, utterly worthless for protecting the people against oppression. If it do not authorize any individual to resist the first and least act of injustice or tyranny on the part of the government, it does not authorize him to resist the last and the greatest. If it do not authorize individuals to nip tyranny in the bud, it does not authorize them to cut it down when its branches are filled with the ripe fruits of plunder and oppression. Those who deny the right of a jury to protect an individual in resisting an unjust law of the government deny him legal defense, whosoever against oppression. The right of revolution, which tyrants in mockery accord to mankind, is no legal right under the government. It is only a natural right to overturn a government. The government itself never acknowledges this right, and the right is practically established only when and because the government no longer exists to call it in question. Well, there's no government in the last several hundred years that deserves overturning than the one we live under here. And I want the big boys to know that. The right, therefore, can be exercised with impunity only when it is exercised victoriously. They will admit, I mean, Cooley in Constitutional Law, and I've got that book here, he says, of course you've got the right to revolution, but you don't have the right to win. And if you don't win, they cut your head off. The right, therefore, can be exercised with impunity only when it is exercised victoriously. All unsuccessful attempts at revolution, however, justifiable in themselves, are punished as treason if the government be permitted to judge of treason. The government itself never admits the injustice of its laws as a legal defense for those who have attempted a revolution and failed. The right of revolution, therefore, is a right of no practical value except for those who are stronger than the government. So long, therefore, as the oppressors of a government are kept within such limits as simply not to exasperate against its power, greater than its own, the right of revolution cannot be appealed to and is therefore inapplicable to the case. This affords a wide field of tyranny, and if a jury cannot here intervene, the oppressed are utterly defenseless. And that's what you have today. They feel by the War Department and the massive weapons that this country's got that even if people do rise up in a revolutionary move, they can suppress them easily with poison gas, atomic weapons, you name it. Because the injustice will certainly be executed unless it be forcefully resisted, and if it be but suffered to be executed, it must then be borne, for the government never makes compensation for its own wrongs. Since then, this forcible resistance to the injustice of the government is only possible means of preserving liberty. It is indispensable to all legal liberty that this resistance should be legalized. It is perfectly self-evident that where there is no legal rights to resist the oppression of the government, there can be no legal liberty. And here it is all important to notice that, practically speaking, there can be no legal right to resist the oppressions of government unless there be some legal tribunal other than the government and wholly independent of and above the government to judge between the government and those who resist its oppressions. In other words, to judge what laws of the government are to be obeyed and what may be resisted and held for nothing. The only tribunal known to our laws for this purpose is a jury. If a jury has not the right to judge between the government and those who disobey its laws and resist its oppressions, the government is absolute. And the people, legally speaking, are slaves. Like many other slaves, they may have sufficient courage and strength to keep their masters somewhat in check, but they are nevertheless known to the law only as slaves. That this outright, this right of resistance was recognized as common law right when the ancient and genuine trial by jury was in force, is it not only proved by the nature of the trial itself, but is acknowledged by history. This right of resistance is recognized by the Constitution of the United States as a strictly legal and constitutional right. It is so recognized first by the provision that the trial of all crimes except in cases of impeachment shall be by jury, that is, by the country, and not by the government. Secondly, by the provision that the right of people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This constitutional security for the right to keep and bear arms implies the right to use them, as much as a constitutional security for the right to buy and keep food would be implied the right to eat it. The Constitution, therefore, takes it for granted that the people will judge the conduct of the government, and that as they have a right, they will also have the sense to use arms whenever the necessity of the case justifies it. And it is a sufficient and legal defense for a person accused of using arms against the government if he can show to the satisfaction of the jury, or even any one of a jury, that the law he resisted was an unjust one. In the American state constitutions also, this right of resistance to the oppressions of the government is recognized in various ways as a natural, legal, and constitutional right. In the first place, it is so recognized by the provisions establishing trial by jury, thus requiring that an accused person shall be tried by the country instead of the government. In the second place, it is recognized by many of them as, for example, those of Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida, by provisions expressly declaring that the people shall have the right to bear arms. In many of them also, as, for example, those in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Florida, Iowa, and Arkansas, by provisions in their bills of rights declaring that men have a natural, inherent, and inalienable right to defend their lives and liberties. This, of course, means that they have a right to defend themselves against any justice on the part of the government and not merely on the part of private individuals, because the object of all bills of rights is to assert the rights of the individuals and the people as against the government and not as against private persons. It would be a matter of ridiculous supererogation to assert in a constitution of the government the natural right of men to defend themselves and their liberties against the private trespassers. Many of these bills of rights also assert the natural right of all men to protect their property, that is, to protect it against the government. It would be unnecessary and silly to indeed to assert in a constitution of the government the natural rights of individuals to protect their property against thieves and robbers. The constitutions of the New Hampshire and Tennessee also declare that the doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive of the good and happiness of mankind. The legal effect of these constitutional recognitions of the right of the individuals to defend their property, liberties, and lives against the government is to legalize resistance to all injustices and oppression of every name and nature whatever on the part of the government. But for this right of resistance on the right of the people, all governments would become tyrannical to a degree of which few people are aware, and most of them are in the world today, including this one. Constitutions are utterly worthless to restrain the tyranny of governments unless it be understood that the people will by force compel the government to keep within the constitutional limits. Practically speaking, no government knows any limits to its power except the endurance of the people. But that the people are stronger than the government and will resist in extreme cases, our governments would be little or nothing else than organized systems of plunder and oppression, which this government of the United States has become. It's an absolute authoritarian criminal conspiracy. That's Tommy speaking. All or nearly all the advantages there is in fixing any constitutional limits to the power of a government is simply to give notice to the government of the point at which it will meet with resistance. If the people are then as good as their word, they may keep the government within bounds they have set for it. Otherwise, it will disregard them, as it's proved by the example of all our American governments in which the constitutions have all become obsolete at the moment of their adoption, for nearly or quite all purposes except the appointment of officers, who at once become particularly absolute, except so far as they are restrained by the fear of popular resistance. They don't fear that now. They still don't fear it because it's not evident. You don't even see masses of people marching in, at least against the Vietnam War, there were masses of people marching in the street. You don't see that anymore. Occupations of the whole Middle East, the illegal destruction of Iraq and all that. No, hardly anybody in the streets. If there were, I'd be there with them. The bounds set to the power of the government by the trial by jury, as will hereafter be shown, are these: that the government shall never touch the property, person, or natural or civil rights of any individual against his consent, except for the purpose of bringing them under a jury for trial, unless in pursuance and execution of the judgment or decree rendered by a jury in each individual case upon such evidence and such law as are satisfactory to their own understanding and consciousness, irrespective of all legislation of the government. Now remember, when it comes to blacks, 14th Amendment is unlawful. The 14th Amendment was illegally put into power, and the whole system of the blacks voting and all that stuff is nonsense. I mean, if you'll read the history of the 14th Amendment, you'll know that it was put in over the will of the subjectus, people under subjection in the South and so forth. So it was illegal. And so all the things that the blacks have used the 14th Amendment for are illegal. And technically, they could all be rounded up and sent back to Africa or wherever they want to go. I mean, that's the facts. Sorry. No, I'm not sorry. Anyhow, that's it for today. Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. And I'll be back with you tomorrow on Thursday. Yeah. That will be the night before pagan Christmas, which we allow the Christians to borrow and tack on their myths and abstract ideas.
From the heartland in north central Indiana, it's the Insurgent Radio Network.
This land is yours. You must protect it. It won't be yours long if you don't protect it. If necessary, with your lives and your children with their lives. Don't discount your enemies. They will be back. And if your house is burned, build it again. If your corn is destroyed, replant. If your children die, bear more. If they drive you out of the valley, live on the sides of the mountain, but live. You always look for leaders, strong men without faults. There aren't any. There are only men like yourselves. They change. They desert. They die. There are no leaders but yourselves. A strong people is the only lasting strength.